Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hi, I'm John McEnroe.
I'm Bjorn Borg.
This is Martina Navratilova.
I'm Mats Wilander.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
And you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Well, hello and welcome to the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph. My name is David Law from BBC Radio 5 Live. I am joined by Catherine Whittaker from Eurosport, who has literally 60 seconds just come off live television to come and sit with me outside where everybody's building up towards the night session. Day is becoming night. We've just seen, Catherine Whittaker, Roger Federer survive for a second match in a row over five sets. He's not doing this easily, is he?
He's not, no, although he seems to be having a great deal of fun. And his on-court interview on the Arthur Ashe Stadium after his second consecutive five-set battle, this time against Mikhail Yuzhny, who he'd barely lost a set to in 16 matches, he said, oh, it's really good fun playing these five-set matches. I mean, what a response to the whole thing. And I just came off air with Alex Krejcik, who did the flash interview, the immediate on-court interview for Eurosport with Federer, and he said Roger told him that the back issues are behind him. He might be a little bit tentative about the back, but there's certainly not any palpable injuries, not feeling any pain. Whether we believe him or not, I don't know. There's all sorts of stats going around Twitter about his service speed, only averaging around about 109 miles per hour for the match today on first serve, and people speculating that he's not arching his back like he usually is on serve. But I still see all that as speculation, and I think we kind of have to take him at his word on it.
Do we? Is he not just hoodwinking us all?
I honestly don't know. I don't see a huge amount of evidence that he's not moving brilliantly. He looks really rusty to me and really nervous.
But isn't movement part of that, really? I mean, if he's moving as fluidly as he normally would with no physical ailment, doesn't that all come from that?
I think the movement's okay. I potentially detect issues on the serve. I do agree. Doesn't seem to be arching his back. That could be a precautionary psychological thing, that he just doesn't have the confidence in it yet, that he hasn't been serving much in the build-up, and just it needs to build up the confidence with the back. It could be that. But, yeah, potentially see evidence of physical issues on the serve, but he just seems so relaxed. I know he is relaxed, but if he really was stressed about a back issue, I just can't believe he would be he was just so brilliantly, he was just chuffed, wasn't he, to come win it. He was just,
it's about 5 years since I've seen him look stressed, though.
Yeah, I know. His box was certainly stressed.
Oh, yeah, they were. No,
we
were panning up during our commentary on 5 Live. We were watching the TV pictures as well as the courts in front of our own eyes. And occasionally it would pan up. And first of all, I noticed that when they showed Mirka, she looked unusually anxious. You don't normally see that. And when Ivan Ljubicic had really bought into the match, you could see him living every shot. And you don't always see that with his box, do you?
No, I was sat in the photographer's pit about 2 metres from his box, just underneath him, so I could hear every single thing they were shouting out.
Oh yeah, do tell.
Well, Mirka is quite vocal, actually, but she was incredibly vocal today. Severin Luti, very vocal. Ivan Ljubicic, not vocal, but certainly extremely intense looking. Tony Godzik was shouting for England. Well, not for England, for America. But
what was he saying?
No coaching or anything. Just, you know, come on, Roger, this is it. This is the one, you know, at pertinent moments in the match. Severin Luthi was shouting in a language I didn't understand. And Mirka was just, come on, that sort of stuff. And a lovely little moment after the match. They stuck around for the whole on-court interview, all of it. And then after the on-court interview, the winner hits balls into the crowd. And, you know, he appeals for the crowd to cheer and direct him where to hit it. His box, Mirka, was pointing to him where to hit the ball. He was looking up to her and she went, over there, hit it over there. I don't know whether it's because they had mates or something in the stand. At first I thought she was directing him to hit it to her, and I thought that would have been the weirdest thing ever, but it wasn't that. It was, I don't know, it was just a sort of sweet, insightful little moment.
We're going to hear from various people to do with Rafael Nadal, who's playing the evening session match. I'll be back after that match to tell you how that went. We're going to be hearing interviews that Catherine's done for Eurosport with Tony Nadal and with Carlos Moya. Fascinating insights from both about how they see Rafa's progress at the moment. We are also going to be hearing from Mats Wilander, looking ahead to the Kyle Edmund against Denis Shapovalov match. He's really interesting on young Denis, so do stick around for that. But a word, Catherine, on Mikhail Yuzhny, because he's lost to the guy now 17 times out of 17. And there was a moment that he went 2-1 up today, and I can't imagine what was going through his head, because he was closing in. He was, you know, the guy's 35. He may never face Roger Federer again anywhere.
I hope he doesn't.
Oh, don't you just, you know, it would be just nice if he got one win.
No, because he's not going to get one. He's not.
Today was the day.
Will he ever get a better chance than that? I don't think so.
How well was he playing? I mean, that's, and I know, I do feel that, look, interestingly enough, Federer went 4-love-up after 14 minutes, and he was toying with Yuzhny. In one return game, he hit 3 drop shots, 2 of them on returns for clean winners. And it was exhibition stuff, and he won the first set in just over 20 minutes, but then Yuzhny managed to just stay with him in the second set and suddenly started to zone himself. I mean, he played the best tennis I've ever seen him play in sets 2 and 3, did Mikhail Yuzhny. He was going toe-to-toe with Roger Federer, teeing off against him. I found it highly entertaining.
Yeah, it was. Unfortunately, I only started watching in the flesh in the fifth set, by which point Yuzhny, although the fight was 100% there, I mean, there were a couple of service games that he managed to hold on to where I've no idea how we managed to do so. I mean, more than a handful of Federer errors certainly helped him there, but he couldn't push off on the set. He was serving like me in that fifth set, and he looked...
Let's be realistic. Although I did in commentary actually say at one point when he missed an open backhand volley, I'd have made that. And, yeah, well, Leon Smith just collapsed in hysterics at that point. But there we are.
Yeah, that really is casting shade on someone, isn't it? Yeah, he was a shell of a man, really, in that fifth set. And it's a credit to him that he got any games on the board, really. And at one point, he actually fell over. And look, I thought that was it. Federer was crossing over to the other side of the net. So it was one of those moments where the whole stadium fell silent. And I thought, oh, no, it's not going to end like this, is it? And didn't even call for the trainer. He just warriored on. So, yeah, I felt so much for Mikhail Yuzhny. I don't think he's ever going to beat Roger Federer. There's no shame in that. He's probably the greatest tennis player of all time. I'm afraid he'll probably just have to retire knowing that...
At least he shared the court with him 17 times. And today, he led him 2-1. He played really, really well. Federer now faces Feliciano Lopez, who defeated Fernando Verdasco. That will be interesting, because if Lopez plays the way, say, he did at Queens... He won the title there. Could be interesting. I mean, he's always had his way, pretty much, hasn't he, Federer, against Lopez? But he's going to have to find something else here, because at the moment, he's able to find it in little snippets, but he's not sustaining his play.
Yeah, he'll have to find something else. End of story. Absolutely. He knows that. It comes back to his physical situation, whether he's physically able to find something else. I do believe he'll improve with each match, however many there are, but how much he'll improve, I don't know, and there remains that big question mark that we can only continue to speculate about.
Indeed. A very close match today for Karolina Pliskova against Nicole Gibbs. She fought back and won to keep her chances alive of still staying at world number one, but She didn't look completely convincing today to me. Elena Svitolina, more convincing. What else have you seen today of note?
Well, I was in the media cafe when Karolina Pliskova was in the strife that she was in, and I overheard a lot of discussion between a few commentators saying that the reason that was happening is because of how slow the Arthur Ashe court is. Now, I've not played on it. I'm not a particularly brilliant judge of courts. That, you know, I can tell when a court's particularly fast or particularly slow, but the minutiae in between, I'm not the best judge. But a lot of people whose opinions I very much rate were saying, you know, you just can't put the ball away on this court. It does not suit Pliskova at all. And in that chat I just had moments ago with Alex Kurecha, he revealed that on last Thursday before the tournament, he saw them painting the court. He doesn't know why. He absolutely says that wouldn't be a usual thing to do. They were banned from taking photos. Well, he took a photo and was promptly told that he couldn't post that. So he thinks that would slow it down. A fresh lick of paint, he thinks it'll speed up as the tournament goes along. But he said he struggles to see how that wouldn't be a factor. So that certainly would explain some of the strange matches. I mean, truly fascinating. I mean, we might have seeds dropping left, right and centre, but match-wise, we've been spoiled so far this tournament. It's been glorious.
Yeah, well, today, actually, that's the first time I've commentated on something that really took off, and it was great fun to do that. A heavy defeat today for Grigor Dimitrov at the hands of Andrei Rublev, who was brilliant. Andrei Rublev today was fantastic, but Dimitrov... he lost the first two sets 7-5, 7-6, and then frankly he just evaporated as a force. He's never fought back from two sets of love down to win a match, and that was disappointing actually, that he didn't show more fight for me in the third set.
No, he's never done it, and there wasn't a moment in that third set where I thought he would do it, and that was probably the most disappointing thing. Rublev is very good and he does seem to be coming of age, reusable quote there, in this tournament. So look, I being challenged by him and maybe even being beaten by him in four or five hard-fought sets is one thing, but losing to him in the way that he did, I find hugely worrying for Grigor Dimitrov. He's never going to come into a slam in better shape.
And we made a big thing of that. I certainly did, about the fact that he'd won the title in Cincinnati just like he had at Queens and Brisbane, and then done well at the slams. Frankly, he came up short today.
He'll never have a bigger opportunity or be in better physical or mental shape. So I don't know where he goes from here. I would love to be a fly on the wall with him and Danny Valverde, because that's a tough discussion. Reusable quote for Thomas Burdick and his coach. Does he have a coach at the moment? But whoever he's going to talk about this tournament with, Thomas Burdick, goodness me.
Yeah, he lost to Alexander Dolgopolov today. Naomi Osaka, my new best mate, won again. Catherine, 7-5 in the third.
Yeah, 7-5 in the third. Bit of a battle. I mean, I think it could be good for her that she's had that battle. Bit of a come down for her to be out on court 13. Denisa Alatova, her opponent, very good player. But, you know, it's the classic come down after the big victory, isn't it? So I think that's really big for her to come through that. And crucially... everything else aside, we are still on for the Ostapenko-Osaka fourth round that I so desperately want.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of people say that. I know where you're coming from. We had the longest women's match in US Open history today between Shelby Rogers and Daria Gavrilova, won in 3 hours and 31 minutes by Shelby Rogers, 7-5 in the third set tiebreak.
And my bit of insight about that is that I just happened to see them walk past one another in the corridor about half an hour ago, so a good couple of hours after that match finished. Shelby Rogers was midway through her big media tour and Gavrilova was hanging out outside the locker room for some reason. They crossed paths, they hugged, and Gavrilova asked how Shelby was doing physically, and she said, yeah, I'm okay, I'm not sure about tomorrow though. And then as she walked on, she said, yeah, I think we spent too much time with one another today.
I think they did. So that kind of sums up most of the day session. The night session is underway. As I said, I'll be back with more Nadal chat a little bit later. Let's just have a very quick look ahead to tomorrow, because Arthur Ashe Stadium will host Denis Shapovalov against Kyle Edmund of Great Britain. It's one, obviously, we're all looking forward to. You'll be able to watch it live on Eurosport. We'll have commentary of it on the BBC Sport website. That's going to take place at 1 o'clock local time, which is 6 p.m. in the UK. And Catherine has had the opportunity to speak to the great Mats Wilander, seven times Grand Slam champion on Eurosport, and she asked him what he made of Denis Shapovalov.
I think, to me, he's the most exciting of the young prospects in the world, actually. The fact that the way that he plays, being left-handed, plays with an enormous amount of spin on the backhand side, goes for his shots on both sides. He's got a really good-looking service motion. He's got a really good body language on court, because he was maybe too wild at some point, and obviously we know what happened with the chair umpire and at the Davis Cup against Great Britain. But I think that has worked out to be a good thing for him, because it's hard to find somebody who's more pumped up than he is on court. When you're playing Rafa Nadal in the Masters Series and Rafa Nadal wins the first set, and you at 18 still beat Nadal in three sets, that goes beyond luck. It goes beyond Nadal playing bad. That's just complete Grand Slam champion material that can only be destroyed by injury.
Well, Catherine, listening to Mats, I mean, I always get pretty excited when I hear Mats, because he always gives you something a little bit different. He always gives it with an extra bit of verve and zip and enthusiasm as well. But my goodness, he is convinced by this guy.
Oh, yeah, he's as excited by him as I am. I mean, everyone is now. But
you were first.
Yeah, well, we were early adopters. We were early adopters. And he is the fourth favourite with the bookies for the title. I know you're making a face at me, and I'm not saying he's going to win it. I am absolutely not
saying
that.
You're desperate to, though. I can see it in your eyes.
Or that he's realistically the fourth favourite.
You want to put him in the final, don't you, Catherine?
However,
you secretly think that maybe he's going to...
Of all the tennis I've seen played on the men's side at this tournament, his has been the highest level.
Wow. Catherine Whittaker with a big statement.
That doesn't mean he'll repeat it. He's 18 years old. He's never done back-to-back best of five matches before. I'm not saying...
When's he going to go out?
I think he's winning against Kyle Edmund.
I'm on the fence on that one, because I think Kyle Edmund's playing really well, and I think there'll be a relentlessness to his game.
I think it'll be a good match. I just think he's winning it. I had him in the quarterfinals before.
I've got him winning
tournament.
It as well.
I know that is meaningless, because I had his Zverev Dimitrov final.
You get a bit of credit for that, actually. I mean, Catherine, honestly, I'm getting so much stick on Twitter. Rightfully so. I mean, my predictions have been absolutely appalling,
Everyone's have. David, my brother, pseudonym Rosie the Dog, texted me earlier and said he's just deeply embarrassed by all of his predictions. I mean,
I
heard the Federer rumours about his back being dodgy, and he's not even in my quarterfinal lineup. I mean,
Federer's not in your quarterfinal
he's
lineup.
He's not. I had a Dimitrov Zverev final, David. I'm in ruins. But Shapovalov.
I'm genuinely shocked. I had not seen your predictions before.
Shapovalov may be my. Did I have him in my quarterfinals? I might have had him. I don't know. Shapovalov could just be my saving grace.
Well, to be honest with you,
I'm not saying he's going to win it.
Your Federer one looks pretty good, actually, at the moment. I know he's in the second round, but he's falling apart, really, isn't he, physically?
Yeah, maybe that will turn out to be good. I think women's I'm doing a bit better. I certainly didn't have Radvanska in the final. I had Sharapova in the semi finals, and you laughed at me in the preview.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, you're not best pleased with her scheduling, are you?
Well, I mean, Caroline Wozniacki certainly isn't. I'm, regardless of whether you agree with her, I'm pleased that somebody's prepared to be outspoken about how they feel about Marina Sharapova, because it's just one big love-in.
I suppose the thing is, the one tomorrow, actually, you know, people have pointed out she is playing a young up-and-coming American player as well, etc. Probably you can see the point. But to have all three on that court, and Muguruza's not on there, and Sloane Stephens isn't on there, and as Wozniacki said, you know, I was supposed to be on court five. You know, it's a bit harsh, isn't it?
Yeah, it's absolutely not fair. Now, look, scheduling is not a meritocracy. It's often not fair. But I think you have to introduce an element of fairness where you can, especially in such a sort of even women's draw. You've got six... No, we're down to five women now, aren't we, vying for the world number one? We started with eight. That should show you that, you know, you've got pretty much eight, nine players that deserve to feature on Arthur Ashe Stadium, and you've got one that's getting very preferential treatment at the moment. I'm quite sure the host broadcasters here have a lot to do with it, and they the host broadcasters should have a big say in scheduling, but surely a nod towards fairness should come in somewhere.
Yeah, well, I would agree. Right, Catherine, you go and get your bus. I'm going to stay here for the night session and do the really hard work and stay here to the middle of the night and watch Rafael Nadal play. And then I'll give my verdict on how he's played, and we'll hear from Tony Nadal and Carlos Moya that you spoke to earlier. How's that?
Sounds all right. They were very good, actually. So you're in good, albeit remote, company.
Can't wait.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right. So Rafael Nadal has won in four sets, but my goodness, it was not straightforward. I've just been watching the match from the commentary box where I sit here for BBC Radio 5 Live, overlooking the Arthur Ashe Stadium, which is just emptied only moments ago. Rafael Nadal has departed the scene, but for a set and a bit, he looked really uncomfortable. He lost the first set to Taro Daniel of Japan, who's ranked 121 in the world, and who played out of his skin tonight. He is a dynamic player, very quick around the court. He was hitting the ball incredibly hard and flat, piercing ground strokes, causing Nadal problems. Nadal was trying to bully him with his own game, but he's a bit off at the moment. He isn't really feeling the ball particularly well. He managed to find a way to come back. Sets 2, 3, and 4 ultimately were fairly comfortable for Nadal, but he was a breakdown earlier in that second set, and there was a look of relief on his face more than anything to have just got through. That's what I saw. After the match, he was hitting balls into the crowd, and they were having a joke about how he was going to try and get the ball to a guy in a purple T-shirt who was in the third tier of the stadium, who was surrounded by loads of other people, and he pretty much put it in the guy's hands and joked with the interviewer afterwards, "That's the best shot I played all match." And it was a bit like that, really. Nadal is a man, I don't think he's as concerned as Federer supporters might be about their man, although Federer seems absolutely fine about it all. He seems to think everything's going just fine. But Nadal looks a bit concerned, I have to say. The fact is, though, he's through into the third round and his draw is pretty good. Leonardo Meyer is a good player. He's his third round opponent, but it's somebody that Nadal would expect to win against. So we'll just have to wait and see. Now, I mentioned that Catherine Whittaker, who has now gone home, has been speaking on Eurosport to a couple of seriously big names from the Nadal camp. One of them is his uncle and his long-time coach, Tony Nadal. And Catherine was asking him about what it is like for Nadal to come into this tournament as the world number one.
Well, it's not one objective for us to achieve the world number one, but because in the last years We have many problems, physical problems, and we can, in the last years, since 2014, he cannot make a complete season. Then we don't think about to be number one, number two, or number three. We think only about the tournaments. But for us, it's important to be, again, the number one. Personally, I prefer to win this tournament to be the number one, but to be number one is very important too.
There is, of course, the potential for Rafa to play Roger for a place in the final and for the world number one ranking. Is that a match that you and that Rafa would look forward to?
No, I prefer that Federer lose before. I don't know who want to play against the best players, never. I prefer to play with not the best players. I prefer to play with the worst players. It's not easy to play with the worst, because normally the worst lose before. But for us, it's not too good to play against Federer, no, or against Djokovic, Murray. No, no, no. Better to play with not too good players.
And just finally, are you able to compare the Rafael Nadal that we see today to the ones that won the title here in 2010 and 2013?
But I think in 2013 he played better than today. It's normal. In 2013, the last year that he won here, he played unbelievable. The final was one of the best matches I have seen. And I remember well because I saw last week in the television, I saw again this match, and it was unbelievable. Many good shots, many winners, less mistakes against one incredible Djokovic. So at the moment, in 2013, Rafael has won the tournament. Now we have Rafael has won the first round. At the moment, he's better. In 2013, when if Rafael win this tournament, then we can talk again.
So that's Tony Nadal, and quite funny, isn't it, to hear him say that he'd rather Rafa doesn't play against Roger Federer when just about everybody else is desperate for that to happen. What about Carlos Moya? Catherine was also speaking to him.
He's here as the world number one. Just talk to me about that achievement. Was it something quite unexpected for Rafa to reach that pinnacle again?
No, I don't think so. At least not for me. I was sure that if he was healthy and motivated and playing well, he would have chance to be number one. I didn't expect to have the chance to be number one in July, because he didn't play well the second part of last year and the gap was very big. But he played very well, combined with Andy and Novak not playing that well and being injured. So suddenly we were in that having that chance in that position. But yeah, I thought that by the end of the year, if he was playing well, he would have chance to be number one.
Does it put a different complexion on the tournament for him at all, the fact that he is here as the best player in the world? Does he feel he has something extra to prove?
Well, I guess if he was a new number one and he was never in that spot before, probably he could feel the pressure. But we're talking about a player that has been 145 weeks as number one, 15 Grand Slam champion. So he has the pressure to play well, to try to win the title, and that will mean that he will be number one. So the pressure is to be Rafael Nadal, and he has to win every single match that he's playing.
Tony's just told us that he doesn't want Rafa to have to play Federer in the semi-finals. Is that a match that you want, a match that Rafa wants?
Why not? I think they proved this year that they are the two best players in the world, and I think it would be a great match for the crowd, a great match for tennis. And this year, Federer found a way to turn things around playing with Rafa. It's our turn now to move on and try to find a way to beat him, still away from that semi-final. But if it happens, we're going to be ready for it. Why not?
And just finally, there are a lot of people that wanted that match potentially to happen in the final. It didn't because of Andy Murray's withdrawal. Rafa was a bit outspoken about when that withdrawal took place. It was a bit strange. He said that it took place after the draw. What's your take on that?
Well, I guess Rafa didn't mean that at all. They just asked him what he thought, and that's it. Obviously, Andy is injured, and He's been since Wimbledon not playing, and you know, now what we wish him, and I wish him, because he's a nice guy, a good friend of mine, is that he recovers fast and he will be ready, hopefully, to play in a few weeks.
We do too, and we wish you a great tournament, Carlos. Thank you.
Thank you.
So there you have it. There's Team Nadal. They are ready to go through whatever it takes, and that's just typical Nadal, isn't it? Because he's not playing the best tennis of his life, but he will keep on keeping on and hoping that it all comes right in the end. What is it? Four matches they need to win, both Federer and he, in order to meet in the semi-finals. It is something New York has never experienced, and it really would be quite something if it happened. So, great matches to look forward to on day five on Friday at the US Open, including that match between Kyle Edmund and Denis Shapovalov, which will be live at 6 p.m. UK time on Eurosport and also on the BBC Sport website. We'll be doing live commentary from here as well. Loads of other good matches to look forward to. Check out the order of play if you get a chance. And we will be back with another daily tennis podcast brought to you in association with The Telegraph and Eurosport after play is finished. Have a good one and enjoy the tennis.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.